Thursday. V-minus 20. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Dan had a feeling something was wrong when Mr. Bird was the one to greet him and Emma from their plane in Denver, but his neighbor's repeated insistence that Clark was simply too tired to handle the drive seemed to come from a place of truth. It did and it didn't, in reality, since Mr. Bird was repeating a lie he believed to be true. Such were the stakes, and so high was the tension, Dan didn't feel at all conflicted in testing the veracity of Mr. Bird's words with a quick application of his esoteric ability, but he killed the connection as soon as he had this confirmation. The full truth, which would come in time, was that Clark couldn't leave Birchwood while Jack Neal was locked in the McCarthy's basement. No one else knew of Jack's presence, not even Henry, who slept in the same house overnight, and initially not even Tara, who was still reeling from a horrifying ordeal perpetrated by Jack himself. Clark had spent the night stewing over what he'd found in the warehouse and wondering what the presence of a GeoSaw flag at Jack's crime scene meant in relation to the triangles and everything else. Phil Norris had so far kept everything as close to his chest as Clark had requested, not telling a soul about anything he'd seen the previous day. Jason Moore, too, had wisely and understandably stayed quiet. While Dan and Emma made their way back to Birchwood with Mr. Bird, Clark talked extensively to Tara about what was going to happen next. This involved telling her that Jack was in the basement in the house next door to the one in which she'd slept restlessly with Clark for company in the living room. Emotionally shattered, she didn't react as Clark had thought she might, by running next door and descending into the basement to give him a warm slice of exactly what he deserved. Instead, she nodded slowly and said she was glad that Dan would have a chance to get inside his head. "I think maybe when we've dealt with this and Jack is taken care of one way or another, you should talk to someone about what happened," Clark said. "Someone better at listening and talking back than me, you know? A professional, maybe?"
"Emma's almost home," Tara said.
Something about the way she said this viscerally reminded Clark of the way Dan used to talk and think about him when they were growing up, like he could come in and solve any problem. But while Emma was as competent as they came, and Tara was dealing with a traumatic experience far better than anyone could have expected, Clark couldn't shake the feeling that the emotions were bound to explode at some point. With very little time remaining until the point at which Ding Ziyang had promised the world that the triangles would be revealed and joined together in full public view, Dan and Emma finally arrived home after a traffic-hit drive from the airport in Mr. Bird's car. He joined them inside the McCarthy's home, where he saw Phil and Henry sitting on the couch as a countdown on the TV told them there were only 9 more minutes until a much-anticipated live broadcast was due to hit the airwaves from Beijing. Only Timo was missing from Dan's inner circle, with Clark having decided this was something he didn't have to be burdened with for now. Tara took a few minutes to fix her makeup before going next door with Clark, keen to downplay things for Emma's benefit, at least for now. She explained this to Clark, and in his mind it said a lot about Tara that she seemed to be worrying more about how her ordeal would affect Emma than anything else. "Hey guys," Dan said when he saw them. Emma wasn't so easily fooled. Hurrying to Tara's side, she saw through the facade. "What's wrong?" As the tears began and Clark's expression hardened like stone, he asked everyone to sit down and listen carefully, because he didn't want to tell the story twice. After listening in growing disbelief and anger as the story of Tara's kidnap twisted and turned to its warehouse-based conclusion, Emma jumped to her feet and dashed across the room as soon as Clark revealed that Jack Neal was locked in the basement. Clark caught up with her before she made it down to the chair Jack was humanely but securely bound to, ensuring that she wouldn't do anything too reckless before Dan had a chance to hear exactly what the scoundrel was thinking. "Business is business," Jack said as soon as the tape was removed from his mouth, staring at Emma with a surprising defiance in his snake-like eyes. She stopped in her tracks. He had known she was coming, obviously and inevitably, and this was what he had chosen to say. Lashing out might not be something he wanted her to do, since he was bound and utterly defenseless, but it was more than likely what he expected. Dan, seldom struck by violent urges, could barely resist the temptation to lunge at Jack and deal with him once and for all.
Instead, he subtly touched his thumb to his middle finger and pointed at Jack. "Does Cole know you're working with Poppy?" he asked. "No," Jack replied, surprisingly straightforwardly. He was telling the truth. This didn't surprise Dan, given how clearly he had sensed Cole's hatred of the Geosovs, but rather provided very welcome confirmation. "And are the triangles real?" Dan asked, moving on without revealing Jack's thoughts to anyone just yet, since he didn't want Jack himself to know about the power. Jack gave a confused frown. "What the hell else would they be? And you should know, you're the messenger's messenger, boy." Whether he was right or wrong, Jack was again telling what he thought was the truth. "One last question for now," Dan sighed, aware of how little time remained before the big moment in Beijing. "Were you in on the plot to take Slater hostage at the Buenos Aires Gravison?" At this, a broad grin crossed Jack's face. "Of course not," he lied. "We'll deal with you later," Dan said, once again glancing at a clock on the wall, before heading to the stairs and urging Clark and Emma to follow him. Upstairs, with just a few minutes left, Dan quickly relayed Jack's unspoken answers to the others. There were no real surprises so far, and Emma was primarily relieved that Dan had been able to hear anything without feeling searing pain as he had the previous day. "What are we going to do with him?" Henry asked, having stayed upstairs due to the lack of wheelchair access to the basement. Mr. Bird had stayed at his side in disbelief along with Phil, who didn't think he would have been able to refrain from decisive violence, and Tara, who couldn't face the thought of looking at Jack ever again. "What are we going to do once we've got everything we need? I mean, we have his phone, and Dan can hear what he's thinking." No one else said what all of them were thinking. Eventually, Emma broke the tension. "I'm not going to tell anyone to do it, but the world will be a safer place when he's dead." Despite the weight of her words, the air in the room felt lighter once they were out. No one spoke against them. "We will be safer when he's dead," she went on. "If you catch a poisonous snake in your bedroom, you don't let it out in the backyard and hope it won't come back. That man is a virus, and he's a virus with a grudge. If we hand him in to the authorities, there's a chance that he gets out. Even if that's a faraway eventuality, it's not a chance we want to take." "Give him to Godfrey," Henry suggested. "Godfrey hates him already, let alone when he finds out he's working with Cole and the Geosovs." Emma shook her head. "Maybe my head isn't clear right now, but I can't even contemplate giving him to anyone. If he's out of our sight, we're in his sights. Henry, he hates us so much he kidnapped Tara. For what, to get to me and Dan? He's just, you can't think about him like you'd think about anyone else. He's working with the Geosovs. I don't know if he really wants to see the world burn like they do, but he definitely wants to see Slater and Godfrey and all of us burn, and he doesn't care about collateral damage. He's given up on life. His grudges are all he has."
"Clark?" Phil said.
Clark inhaled sharply.
"What?"
With an undisguised hand gesture, Phil called him over to the corner of the room.
"If it really comes down to, you know, something having to happen?"
"Yeah." Phil looked at him intently.
"Well, if something has to be done, it ain't exactly gonna be one of them, is it? What do you say? Rock, paper, scissors?"
Clark studied Phil's eyes for a few seconds, trying to figure out whether he was serious. Those eyes had seen a lot, and Phil's hands had accumulated a lot of dirt over the years. Although he was a fairly warm man to those he knew and liked, Clark had grown up in the knowledge that Phil wasn't someone whose wrong side he wanted to spend too much time on. Clearly, he was serious.
"Are you thinking that the winner gets to do this, or that the loser has to?" Clark asked.
"Winner's choice," Phil replied.
"On three, not after three, okay?"
Out of sight of everyone else, the two men reached a highly uncomfortable decision in a way that would have felt disrespectfully flippant if it didn't relate to someone they considered on par with a viral infection.
"Rock beats scissors," Clark said, observantly rather than triumphantly.
Phil shrugged.
"Well, I did say winner's choice."
"If you wanted to do it, you would have volunteered. And I can't put this on you, Phil. You already helped out. So if something does have to be handled here, I'll handle it. With a nod, Phil placed his right hand on Clark's left shoulder, then patted his left hand twice on Clark's right cheek. You're a good man, son. A good man. Here we go, everyone, Mr. Bird announced. They're about to cut to Beijing. Everyone gathered around the TV, with Dan finding himself next to Tara. She leaned on him, quite literally, and said nothing as she breathed slowly. It's all going to work out, he promised. We're past the worst of this. You got the worst of it, and you made it through. You're the strongest person here. She looked up at him with a smile.
You always know the right thing to say. Is someone feeding you lines?
Dan couldn't help but laugh loudly at this, drawing verbal rebukes from Henry and Clark, along with a far-reaching punch in the arm from the latter. Shut up, they cried in unison. Abruptly, the ACN studio feed finally cut to live coverage from the empty square outside of the ELF building in Beijing. Empty of people, that was. Holy shit, Phil Norris gawped. No one told him to be quiet, because he had taken the words right out of their mouths.